I want to welcome you to session two of Living the Connected Digital Life, coming at you from your TTJ instructor team. Trainer Matt here, glad to be with you. And just before we do get into the content here, I want to remind you that if you have not already done so, I would highly encourage you to subscribe to the blog at ttjtech.net. That's ttjtech.net. That's how you can stay in the loop. Also, don't forget that we do have a podcast called TTJ Talk. You can find that on the ttjtech.net website. And we are on all of the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, Overdrive. I think we're on Overdrive, are we? I don't know. Breaker, quite a few of them. Trainer Cliff has Stir It Up, Sturitup. So he's got his own podcast as well. We're frequent guests on each other's podcasts. But anyhow, in addition to all of that, don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at TalkTTJ and Periscope TTJ Talk. So, with all that said, let's get the ball rolling. Now, as you know, we'll be going at it every Monday until the week of, well, including the week of Thanksgiving. Even the Monday before Thanksgiving, we teach. Then we take a break for the holiday season. We come back to you the second week of January for voiceover. Right up through April, middle of April, we do iPad, and we got you covered all the way to the end of May. We'll give you a break for the summer. Now, today, we're going to continue our discussion of the connected digital life. Having all your stuff with you everywhere you go on all of your devices. As you know, last week we introduced you to Apple IDs because we said that at the core of this for us is Apple. Apple's products, software, and services really do. The integration of all of those things really does provide an experience that is just unparalleled within the tech world. And we love it. We believe you will too. Now, iCloud is a huge part of that. We talked about several iCloud features already. We've talked about calendars, contacts, notes, reminders, photos, music, and more. I want to start out by revisiting something we, I think, briefly discussed, but I want to get into a little more depth here on it, and then we'll move on. And that is books and apps. So with books, if you purchase a book in the Apple Bookstore, just like everything else we talked about, you can re-download it for free on all of your devices, and that does include audiobooks. And then with other Apple IDs in your family share group, if you have them, you know they can also access them free of charge once they've been purchased once. The purchased section of your various, you know, stores, Apple Books, you know, the iTunes store, all of these app store will always show you your purchased content and allow you to download it again for free. You can set up automatic downloads on your devices so that if you download something on one device, it automatically downloads on another. You can choose the kinds of content that you do allow automatic downloads for. And the other thing I want to talk to you about with family sharing, and I believe I mentioned briefly about this, but there is a feature when you have a child sharing as part of a family share group, you can turn on a feature called Ask to Buy. And when this is on, the child actually will have to send you an approval request anytime they want to purchase any content or even download any content. And then you can approve that if you so choose. Apps are included in that. And again, just like books, apps can be re-downloaded for free on all of your devices and shared with up to 6 members of the family with family sharing. There are a few features every now and then with certain apps that don't get shared in that way, some in-app purchases and subscriptions, but a lot of times they've got that covered in other ways. For example, if you subscribe to a service like Hulu, you're not going to actually share the iTunes subscription, but you, once you sign into Hulu with the primary account, then you can have your own profile. I think Hulu supports up to, I don't know, 6 or 10 profiles, something like that, where then everybody is getting his or her own content. So you really are sharing. All right, the next thing I would like to talk about today has to do with documents and app data. Now, some people would probably say that this is arguably some of the most important stuff to talk about. And so there are two ways that documents and app data can be shared with iCloud. The first is through what we call documents in the cloud. Well, we don't. Apple does. But it is a feature that automatically syncs documents and data between apps without providing you unfettered access to the files themselves. This you'll see typically in things like recipe apps or other apps where it's really not appropriate to move the file outside of the app. Unless you're going to share it, of course. There's always, you know, share options like messages and mail and, you know, different things. But I'm talking about the file itself basically stays and lives inside of that app, but you do want it on all of your devices. So as soon as you download and install that app on another device, you've got the app data or the files. One app that I can give you as an example of this is Apple Clips. The videos, it's a very accessible app with VoiceOver, by the way. We're going to teach it to you in the iPad course. The videos you make, you don't choose where to save them. They get saved right there. Now, you can share them. You can share them with your photo library. You can save them to files. You can share them by messages, on YouTube, many different things. But basically, they live in the app. And so if I install Clips on a second device signed in with the same Apple ID, those videos just show up right there. Also, app data. And this can be things like game progress and other app settings and so forth. Now, I want to remind you that there are apps that save their data to their own cloud services. We talked about this. So I sometimes get asked a question by customers like, well, when I get my new phone, will iCloud have all my Facebook data backed up? Now, iCloud doesn't need to have all your Facebook data backed up because Facebook is a web resident app. That means it's web-based. It lives on the web. The data is in the cloud anyway, but it's Facebook's cloud system. So iCloud is not going to back up your Facebook friends list or your profile picture, all of those things. That is done by the folks at Facebook. Some apps use iCloud, some apps use their own services, some use a combination of both or let you choose. There's a lot of different ways to the same end goal. Now, the second way that iCloud syncs documents is through Files app support and what is known as iCloud Drive. Now, as its name suggests, iCloud Drive, though it's just one part of iCloud, is actually a place where you can store files and folders in any way that you choose. And as long as they are saved to iCloud Drive, they will be available on all of your devices. Now, many apps that use iCloud automatically install what appears to be a folder on iCloud Drive. It's actually not a folder. It's what's known as a package or a container, I believe is the term, or a library maybe. I can't remember which of those is the correct term right now. But they function in many ways very similar to folders, and you can create subfolders and stuff. But this is a great place to save the stuff because it's got the name of the app. So for example, when you install Apple Pages, Keynote, or Numbers, you get folders, packages, what do I call them, libraries, on the iCloud Drive for Pages, Keynote, and Numbers. And you can put your documents inside them. And that's great because it's common sense organization, right? And in addition to that, you can create your own folders if you want to. And if you are a Mac user, your documents folder and your desktop folder from the Mac even get stored in iCloud. So there are lots and lots of options. Again, you can save anything anywhere you want on iCloud Drive and it will sync. I recommend using those libraries or containers, whatever they're supposed to be called, to keep things most organized. And remember, you can create subfolders within them and you can also tag items. And this way, let's suppose that there are many files that go together for a specific project, you can tag them with the name of that project or with a color so that you'll be able to find them very easily when you search by tag or browse by tag. Now, we will, remember, this is kind of a whirlwind tour class here, but when we do the iPad course and the VoiceOver course, we will teach you extensively about the Files app, extensively about iCloud Drive, extensively about how to work with documents and all of these different types of things. One thing I do want to point out right now is that when you work with apps in iOS and iPadOS, like Pages, for example, you do not need to save. There's no save as, there's no, you can duplicate, you can rename, you can, you know, do all these different things, but you don't need to save. It happens automatically. Just make sure when you create a new document that you happen to be in the folder that you want that document to be stored in. Otherwise, you can always move it later. It's not a big deal, but it's wise to just do that. It should be the default, by the way. Like when you install Pages, you're going to see that you're going to see your document manager, as it's called, which won't have anything in it because you've just installed it if you've never used it before. Unless you have, then it will have your stuff in it. But, if you haven't, it has nothing in it. But you'll see that the location selected is Pages in iCloud Drive. So that's a good thing, okay? You don't have to manually save. You just press the home button, swipe up, go back to the document manager, whatever the case may be, and everything's just saved there for you. Really, really simple and really, really easy. Now let's talk a little bit more about the Files app. So the Files app gives you full access to iCloud Drive. It also gives you local on-device access. So they call it like on my iPhone or on my iPad. Plus, if you have installed third-party cloud storage or syncing apps like Dropbox, Google Drive, or OneDrive, for example, pCloud and others, they are going to be accessible through the Files app as well. Not only that, but removable storage and even remote servers like network attached storage or NAS, NAS devices like the Western Digital My Cloud, for example, are also accessible through the Files app, which is really, really awesome. Now, just to answer some questions you might have, if you want to connect, for example, a USB flash drive to your iPad, you're going to need a little adapter. Apple sells them for about $39. They're called the Lightning to USB 3 adapter. It may even still say the words camera adapter because that was the originally designed purpose for it, but they can do so much more. You can hook up all kinds of peripherals. And what this does is it has one end that plugs directly into your Lightning port. The other side of the adapter has a USB port and a female Lightning port so you can also charge. It's like a pass-through so that you can charge the iPad while connecting your USB device. And this is about more than just providing convenience. Some accessories actually require that extra boost of power that plugging your iPad in will give. It will provide additional power, and some devices need it. If you try to use this on an iPhone, almost all of your USB accessories are going to need it. Even your flash drives may need it. On an iPad, a lot of them won't need it, but some of them might. You get into full-fledged external hard drives, they probably will, especially if they're bus-powered hard drives, meaning they get their power from the device they're connected to. So you may need to plug them in, and that's what that's there for. Now, if you are using the 2018 iPad Pro, there is a USB-C to USB adapter available for you. Also, there are Lightning to SD card readers and other adapters, for example, the Lightning or USB-C digital AV multimedia adapter, which has HDMI, for example. So lots and lots of options and adapters and things of that nature. But back to what we were talking about, this is all available then through the Files app. And the Files app truly is a full-fledged, you know, you can move your files, copy, paste, create subfolders, tag them, zip and unzip them. There's so much that you can do. It really is a perfect app to work with. Now, I would like to focus, though, on this iCloud Drive portion for the documents, because let me just give you a practical scenario that I always like to give. If I create a keynote presentation or a Pages document or something, for example, on my iPad, then I go out to dinner, but I only take my iPhone with me. I get out to dinner and we're sitting there having dinner and the person says to me, hey, let me see that document you're working on. I don't have to say, oh, I didn't bring my iPad. Sorry, I'll have to show you tomorrow or whatever. No, I can just pull out my iPhone, open up the same document right there. They say, oh, you need to move this this item a little bit or fix this word or insert a photo. When I do that right on my iPhone, instantly shows up on my iPad as well when I get home and even on my Mac. Now, what if we want to work collaboratively? Real-time collaboration is such an awesome feature. And in the Files app, you can add people just like you can in Notes to individual files. And soon, we don't know exactly when, but sometime relatively soon, you're going to be able to add people to entire iCloud Drive folders as well. Also, within the Pages, Keynote, and Numbers apps, you can add people. They call it Collaborate with Others. You send them a link. You can choose if the document is read-only or if it has password protection and various things. If you allow the write access also, when you send this, the user who receives the invite can access the file and can edit it in real time with you from their own device. You can see each other's cursors. VoiceOver will announce that and tell you when they're typing. You can have the changes that one person makes look a different color than the changes that the other person's making, and both of you can continue to work on the document. Now, if the person has an Apple device, that's going to be the best scenario. That will just open right up on whatever app created it. You use Pages to create this document, you send this invite to another Apple user, it'll open in Pages on their Apple device. But if you happen to send it to, for example, a Windows user, that's not a problem either, because the link will take them to iCloud.com. They can sign in. If they don't have an Apple ID, they can create one for free, and now they can use iWork for iCloud. This gives them a web-based version of Pages, Keynote, and Numbers so that they, too, can view the document and do most of the same things you're doing. That is real-time collaboration with the various documents or even presentations or spreadsheets and what have you. It is a fantastic feature. All right, moving on to another iCloud feature, I'd like to talk about Safari in iCloud and as part of the Connected Digital Life. Now, we're not going to cover the things like autofill credit cards and iCloud keychain and stuff today. We will cover them in this course, but not today. The parts of Safari that I want to talk about today have to do with syncing of basic Safari data. So, for example, if you add a favorite or a bookmark on one of your devices, that bookmark or favorite gets added to Safari on all of your devices signed in with the same Apple ID. Not only those, but the reading list, your browsing history, and even the open tabs that you have. If I visit a website on one device and then I just press the home button or whatever I do, I go to my second device, I can see those iCloud tabs that are open on the other device and instantly be taken to them if I want. It is a really great feature and it works very, very well. Now, one of the topics that came up in class, which we will talk about this extensively during the spring season, but one of the discussions that did come up was about how you can instantly close all of your tabs by long pressing on the tabs button. You can also set up Safari by going to your settings app and then going to Safari. You can set it up to automatically close unused tabs after a specified period of time. And finally, you can long press on the bookmarks icon in Safari. Remember, long press is a double tap and hold. And if you have at least two tabs open, you got to have at least two for this to be an option, you will now have the option of saving all open tabs as bookmarks. So that's just a little side note there. Now, the next feature I want to talk about as part of the Connected Digital Life is Siri. Now, Siri definitely uses iCloud, and this is so obvious when you set up a new device and realize that you don't have to teach Siri who you are, who your relatives are, or anything like that. She just knows because of the other devices, thanks to iCloud. But Siri is also part of the Connected Digital Life for another reason, and that is because, as I like to say, Siri is much more than just that voice that you summon to ask questions to. Oh, she does do that, or he, depending on what you have set up. But Siri also works in the background, behind the scenes, to learn your behaviors and to make life easier and more convenient for you. And allow me to give you just a few examples of how Siri does this. So one way that Siri does this is to recognize when you're talking to people in messages or emails or various things, what it is that you are attempting to plan. If, for example, you were talking to someone and said, hey, can we have lunch tomorrow at noon? Sure, we can have lunch tomorrow at noon. Okay. When you go to your calendar, you'll find a Siri suggested event. When you create a new event, it will provide the information. It'll say, hey, maybe you want to add lunch with whoever tomorrow at noon. And this is one way. Another sort of component to that is if you get an email with a confirmation for a hotel or a flight, this will show up as a suggested event to be added to your calendar as well. Siri finds contact information, finds date and time information, and more. Another way you can demonstrate Siri's working in the background like this, the way that she does, is to go into a text message, for example, and start typing, my phone number is, and then look at the quick bar above the letters U, O, and I, and you will find your phone number there, ready for you to just tap or double tap to be inserted into what you're typing. Yet another example of what Siri can do in the background is sometimes she will suggest, based upon your habits, if they're detectable on a day-to-day basis. For example, in the mornings, maybe you read the news while sipping coffee. So now in the morning, she may, on your lock screen, you may see the option to open news. Or in the evening on the lock screen, you may see the option to set your alarm for the next day. Also, the other thing that happens is if you get a phone call and miss that call, you may get a Siri suggestion to call that person back on the lock screen. Now, Siri works in searches and can detect what you're searching for and use it to help you in other areas. Siri, as I mentioned, definitely works on the lock screen. And the really cool part about this is that it's so private and so secure that you don't have to worry about your data being compromised or anything like that. It just works, makes your life easier, and really enhances the experience for you. Now, taking Siri to the next level are two sort of additional features to Siri. One is called SiriKit, and many app developers can use SiriKit to make their apps function with Siri. Some examples of apps that function with Siri are apps like Uber, OpenTable, WhatsApp, Zoom, and now music apps like Pandora. Not only Pandora, but Spotify is now working with SiriKit as well. The second way that Siri's abilities have been drastically enhanced is through Siri shortcuts. Now, these are sometimes suggested by Siri based upon what you do. You can also create your own custom multi-step shortcuts. You can have, for example, a shortcut that as soon as you tell Siri you're on your way home, she will notify your family of your ETA. She will get you directions to home. She will adjust your home accessories, which we're going to talk about later, so that, you know, your home is ready for your arrival, and she will play your favorite jams in the music app. And all of this is not even close to beyond the realm of possibilities. I set up a Siri shortcut so that when I say Merry Christmas, Siri adjusts the she turns on the Christmas tree. So our Christmas tree lights. She makes our other couple of our other lights red or green, and she shuffles our Christmas playlist in Apple Music. And this is going to become even easier with the HomePod software update, supposedly, that's coming out fairly soon. You can have automations in Shortcuts so that when a certain thing occurs, then these things happen for you in response, given a certain time of day or what have you. It is really, really cool, and we're going to talk more about it when we get to smart homes and smart home automation. But Siri Shortcuts are in no way limited to smart homes and home automation. You can automate Shortcuts for other purposes as well. We will do a bit more on Siri Shortcuts if there's time near the end of this course, and if not, it will be at least somewhat incorporated into our spring courses as well. This is a relatively new feature. It was introduced in iOS 12 and drastically improved in iOS 13 and iPadOS. It's something which can be very simple or very advanced, but we think people are really loving and are going to really love creating Siri Shortcuts. So this is a part of how Siri works to enhance the connected digital life. Now, you know, speaking of maps, I mentioned maps. Maps is another example of the connected digital life because maps can share your ETA with people. You can, it's these apps working together. It's like we talked about how your calendar can have the travel time and then notify you and give you directions to your event. You know, you don't have to manually handle all of these tasks separately. It's Siri can remember Apple Maps, you know, where your car is parked, and just so many other types of things like this throughout the iOS and iPadOS platforms and tvOS and watchOS and all of these, you know, it's really incredible. Now, the next feature that I'd like to talk to you about is a group of features kind of lumped together as what is known as continuity features. The first one of these features is called Handoff. Handoff allows us to be working on something on one of our devices and immediately pick up exactly where we left off on another device. So, for example, let's suppose I'm reading a website, composing a message, or even working on a Pages document on my iPad. I suddenly want to switch to the iPhone, or vice versa. I can just grab that second device and instantly switch, be taken instantly to the exact spot I was in the message, or on the website, or in my Pages document. Now, how do we do this? First of all, the device you're switching from, the device you're handing off from, is going to have to be unlocked. Secondly, you want to make sure Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are enabled on both devices. You're signed into iCloud with the same Apple IDs. But anyhow, the device is unlocked that you're going to hand off from. You pick up the device that you're going to hand off to, and you look in the app switcher for an iPhone or in the dock for an iPad. You will see a handoff badge. It's the farthest icon to the right in the app switcher. And on the dock, it's down on the bottom right in the suggested apps area. You just tap on it, double tap for voiceover, and it instantly picks up right where you left off. And then you can just put the first device to sleep or whatever. Now, I mentioned to folks specifically about the iPad that the dock can have an app that actually already appears on the dock. And a great example of this is maybe you have mail on the left-hand side of your dock, and suddenly it appears on the right because it's a handoff badge. Make sure if you want to hand off, you use the right side mail icon, because that is the handoff badge. That's the one that will take you right to where you left off. And this is such a cool feature. It just works. And it, you know, you don't have to worry about any of the process or, you know, opening and then having to manually find the message or, you know, the document or whatever. It just takes you right to where you left off. Many third-party apps even support the handoff feature. Now, handoff is also used to, in some cases, transfer calls between devices like watch to iPhone. You can iPhone to HomePod or vice versa. And the HomePod will be getting a whole host of new handoff features coming up here very soon. And they will, for example, allow you to bring your iPhone that's playing music up to the HomePod to immediately have the music switch to playing on the HomePod, or vice versa. And again, you can hand off phone calls, you can hand off podcasts. The HomePod's going to recognize people's voices. Another great CDL feature, Connected Digital Life feature, that sort of relates to this is a shared listening experience with two sets of AirPods. You can both listen to the same music from one device, and that is super cool. Now, let's talk about some other continuity features. The next one I want to talk about is AirDrop. Now, AirDrop allows you to instantly share files with people nearby. They have to be physically close in proximity to you. You got to have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth enabled, but you do not have to be on the same Wi-Fi network as the recipient. The iOS devices, they generate their own sort of ad hoc Wi-Fi network on the fly, and it just works. So, there are no file size restrictions. Sometimes you see in a message it's too large to send, or in an email, you know, although there's MailDrop. We'll talk about that next. But still, sometimes there are restrictions. You don't have those with AirDrop. This is peer-to-peer file sharing, and it works anywhere you see a share sheet for the most part. There's a couple, maybe little exceptions, but generally it's in all the share sheets. The thing you want to do if you're going to receive a file is to make sure that your AirDrop settings allow it. You want to go into the Settings app and then to General and then AirDrop, or go to the Control Center and long press on the Wi-Fi icon to find AirDrop. You want to make sure you're set to either Contacts Only or Everyone so that you can receive. Now, to use AirDrop, to send, what you're going to do is use the share option, and you'll see the person, the recipient has to have their device awake. It has to be awake. You'll see their device by their name or whatever, you know, John's iPhone. You just tap on it, and it will instantly say, hey, look, so-and-so wants to share this with you, this photo or this recipe or this document or this website. So then you just click accept, and it instantly comes to you. It's so simple. When it comes to you, it either opens in the app that was used to create it or gives you the choices of where you want to save it and provides a quick look so you can kind of get a preview of the file. It works great. Now, speaking of AirDrop, let's talk about MailDrop. Now, MailDrop is a way of sending large file attachments through iCloud, file attachments that are too large to send normally via email. And what happens here, this functions very much like some of you may have used things like Adobe Send Now or Send Space or the You Send It, now known as Hightail. Well, this is built right in. Nothing extra to worry about. It works with any email account. You have a file, an email attachment that it thinks is going to be too large for your ISP. It's going to, when you hit send, it's going to say, hey, do you want to use MailDrop to send this? Yes, I do. Okay. Now, what it will do is it will upload that file to iCloud and provide a link to the recipient. The link has is good for 30 days usually, and the recipient can just tap on the link to download the file. As easy as that. All right, next, while we're talking about things like this, let's talk about messages and phone calls with continuity. Now, you have iCloud Messages, which stores all of your messages in iCloud and allows you to access them on all of your devices without taking up storage space on all devices. And when you delete a message from one device, it gets deleted from all of your other devices. In addition to that, you have text forwarding, and this is specifically for non-iMessages. Reminder, iMessages are between Apple users. They are depicted when you're sending them in blue for those who can see. They have tons of extra features, you know, digital touch, drawing, heartbeats, Apple Pay Cash, recordings, audio, you know, right in the messages. No character limits, much bigger file limits, or maybe no file limits now. I don't even know. The delivered note of the notifying you, or you can see when the message has been delivered, when it's been read, when the person is typing in response. You can do message effects, you know, screen and bubble effects, and so much more. So iMessage is really awesome. But iMessage is between Apple to Apple. The other kinds of messages are SMS and MMS. SMS is text only. MMS is a text message with, a photo or a video in it. And most carriers support both kinds. These use your carrier data. These SMS and MMS use your carrier texting plan, whereas iMessages use data, either Wi-Fi or cellular data, excuse me. So, with text forwarding, this ensures that the SMS and MMS messages also, you know, can be created, sent, and received on even non-iPhone devices. It will use the texting plan from your iPhone, but it will allow you to use your iPad or, you know, iPod Touch or your Mac as well to send and receive those messages. Similarly, iPhone cellular calling. Now, what happens here is you have an iPhone. It's going to use your iPhone cellular plan to allow you to make and receive calls on your other devices. When you can set it up so that when you receive a call on your iPhone, all of your Apple devices or any ones you want will ring. You can answer them on anything. Same thing with placing a call. You can place a call on any of these devices. And a step up from this is now Wi-Fi calling, which uses iCloud for its processing, but doesn't even require the iPhone to be on or in close proximity. All right, now I'd like to talk about some Wi-Fi features that you have with iCloud. And the first one I'd like to talk about as a part of the Connected Digital Life is Wi-Fi network sharing. Now, we've all been there. Someone's come over to our house and they've said, hey, I need to get on your Wi-Fi. Okay, can you give me the password? So you tell them which Wi-Fi network to tap on, and then you read to them this long password, and maybe they get it right or maybe they don't, and they say, I'm sorry, can you read that to me again? Well, now things have gotten much easier. Now, for this to work, you've got to have the person in your contacts, and when they are, they will be able to receive the password directly from your device. Let's suppose you're already on your Wi-Fi network and they want to join it. You tell them which network to tap on, and as soon as they do, you will get a message on your devices saying, do you want to allow this person to connect? Do you want to share the password with them? You just hit share. It instantly inputs the password for them, and they join. It is super awesome and so easy, incredibly simple, and it just works. iCloud hotspots and family sharing with personal hotspots. So a personal hotspot, this is a bit oversimplified maybe, but basically a personal hotspot is using a cellular device to create a Wi-Fi network. And this is useful if, for example, you have a Wi-Fi only iPad and you want it to be able to be on the internet even when you're out on the road and not on Wi-Fi. Well, you can create a Wi-Fi network using your iPhone by turning on the personal hotspot feature. And most cell plans, most carriers do support at least some degree of personal hotspot data every month. Now, it used to be that you would be able to see a whole bunch of hotspots. They're secure, and Apple, of course, is way more secure than all the other guys in just about everything they do, so I'm sure the hotspots are no exception, but still, you'd go to join a Wi-Fi network at a concert or a ball game or something, and you'd see, you know, 35 different hotspots around you. Well, this new method is so cool. When you have a family share group, your family can instantly and always see your hotspots without you having to do a thing. They can join them, and when they attempt to, you'll get a message if you have it set up this way. Do you want to allow this person to join your hotspot? But nobody else outside of the family share group can see your hotspot. Now, of course, you can change that feature if you want to have it so that everybody can see it or, you know, any other variety of settings. But that is the default, and it's so awesome because your family can see it, can join it. But whenever somebody else tries to look, they will not even see it. And that is hotspot sharing. Now, as you can see, all of these features are Connected Digital Life features because they all enhance the experience, allowing us to do things in whatever way works best for us on any device we choose, no matter where we go. They don't require extra setting up of the devices. They are just ready to go when you sign in with an Apple ID. And that, to me, is truly awesome. Now, I'd like to I'm going to check my notes here and make sure that I haven't missed
any features. I'm looking through my notes really quick. I think maybe all we have, but I want to just make sure before we go any further here. And then we've gone over all of these things here that I'm seeing right now. We've talked about handoff, but I felt like there might have been something else, and I just don't want to forget if there was. So we covered. Oh, yeah, there is something else. I knew I felt like there was something else for a reason. Well, there is. Okay. Praise the Lord. Thank you, Lord. I really almost forgot about this, and it's so important. What a major connected digital life feature this is. So, I shared with the students in class that when I was about 12 or 13 years old, Bill Gates, I read a book that was written by Bill Gates called The Road Ahead. He kind of shared his vision for the future of technology. Three or four things really stood out for me as a kid that he talked about. One was the smart home. Another was digital ebooks. Another one was this incredible world of internet-based multimedia and those types of things. And the last was the wallet PC, as he called it. All of these things have come to fruition, and we're going to talk about all of them in this class. And what always amazes me is that Apple has been at the forefront of the vast majority of them. We don't have what we call a wallet PC, but we do have Apple Pay. Apple Pay and Apple Wallet are absolutely awesome. So Wallet was created originally as Passbook to allow you to store your passes, your coupons, your Starbucks card, your, you know, Amtrak train tickets, your concert tickets, your Sam's Club memberships, all sorts of different things like that. And it still serves that purpose better than ever. It's location aware, so it can get a pass ready for you automatically. It's really, really cool. But there's something even more awesome, and that is Apple Pay. With Apple Pay, you can leave the credit card behind and use your iPhone or your Apple Watch in stores and restaurants to pay for your purchases. You use your own credit cards or bank cards with Apple Pay. You store them in there, but the actual numbers are never used. A randomly generated device account number is used instead. So you don't have to worry about people getting hold of your credit card or bank account numbers. Not only that, these cards are stored in a secure enclave on the device, processed on the device. They're not even iCloud is used. iCloud syncs portions of this stuff, but not that sensitive information. All of that is stored securely in a secure chip on the device. Many places throughout the country and even in other countries accept Apple Pay. Once you've stored your bank cards, your credit cards in Apple Pay, you're ready to go. To use Apple Pay, simply double-click the side button of your iPhone or the side button of your Apple Watch, the button that's not the digital crown, or if you still have a home button device, double-click the home button. You'll immediately authenticate with your iPhone with either Touch ID or Face ID, and then just hold the device near the reader, and instantly the transaction is complete. With your Apple Watch, it's even quicker. You just double-click the side button, and because of wrist detection, you don't even have to do any further authentication. So here's what happens. When you put your Apple Watch on in the morning, you're going to be asked to enter the passcode for your Apple Watch. Now, once you do, as long as the watch stays on your wrist, you are authenticated. If the watch detects that it has been removed from your wrist, and this can even happen if it's lifted up too far or loosened too much, then you'll have to enter your passcode again. That is the authentication method. It's so simple. You hold your watch up there to the reader, and it is done. It's super incredibly simple to pay for purchases with Apple Pay. You double-click the side button to initiate it, and then, as I said, just hold it up to the reader. Now, in the interim, in that period of time after you've double-clicked the side button, you do have the option, if you have more than one card stored in there, of changing which payment method you wish to use. And speaking of payment methods, the next feature of Apple Pay that I'd like to talk about is Apple Pay Cash, or Apple Cash. Now, how does this work? This is person-to-person payments. I can now pay my family, my friends, anybody I choose using Apple Pay. Now, for Apple Pay Cash to work, you must have an actual bank card stored on your iOS device in Apple Wallet. It will not work with just a credit card. But again, it's all secure. You know, military-grade encryption, randomized, it's not going to, you know. And anyhow, once that's stored in there, you can set up Apple Pay Cash. Now, you can receive money without that bank card, but you can't send money without that bank card unless you have already received it from somebody else. We'll talk about that in a second. That probably sounds a bit confusing right now. Sorry. But Let me just take it one step at a time here. Your Apple Pay Cash card is actually like another credit card. It functions in the same way as any of your other cards in Apple Pay, except that it starts out with a zero balance and you have to add money to it in order to be able to use it. Now, where are you going to get this money from? Well, this is what I'm saying to you. You either have to get it from your bank using your bank card, or when somebody else sends you money using Apple Pay Cash, that becomes a positive Apple Cash balance for you, and you can then use that to send to others or to pay for purchases with Apple Pay in retail locations. You can also, once you receive money, transfer that money to the bank if you'd rather have it in your checking account, for example, or what have you. Now, there are two ways of transferring the money. There's the instant transfer, which I think assesses like a 1% fee or something. Or the other way is just the standard, which can they say 1 to 3 business days. You know, I can't make any claims beyond what Apple says, but for me, it's always been on the lower end of that. And there's no fee with that. So once you put money in your Apple Cash card, though, as I said, you can send that to others, no fee, but you also can use it to pay for purchases at a restaurant or, you know, a store, any location where Apple Pay is accepted. And by the way, even online, and the iPad works with online Apple Pay as well. It does not have the NFC or near field communications chip that the iPhone and Apple Watch have, so you can't take an iPad into Subway or Starbucks to, you know, pay for your lunch. But you can use it online, both in apps and on websites in Safari. Apple Pay does work in those situations as well. And again, you can use the Apple Cash card for anywhere that Apple Pay is accepted. It's just like having another card. And speaking of another card, there's one more component to this that we want to talk about, and that is the Apple Card. To borrow a term from Trainer Cliff when he talked about a different subject, the Apple Card and Apple Pay are like peanut butter and jelly. They are just meant to go together. The Apple Card is revolutionary, and it is created in combination with a partnership between Apple and Goldman Sachs, and the network is MasterCard, so that means it's accepted that anywhere MasterCard is accepted. Now, Apple Card is first and foremost a digital card. What do I mean by that? You apply from the Apple Wallet app for your Apple Card. If you're approved, you instantly find out. You get the amount that you're going to line of credit, you know. And if you accept the offer, you just tap accept. And you can instantly start using your Apple Card anywhere that Apple Pay is accepted. Apple Card works with Apple Pay on your devices. Now, you will also receive a physical Apple Card by mail. And this is like no other card you've ever seen. I don't know if I've ever, maybe once or twice, but I'm not 100% sure that I've gone anywhere with this thing where I haven't gotten a comment as to how different it looks, how awesome it looks. It's heavy, because it does. It's a titanium Apple Card. All it has on it is the Apple logo and your name engraved, etched into it, I guess. It does not have a credit card number on it. It supports the chip readers and the magnetic stripe, but you don't have a card number on it. You just present it to the clerk and they use it. Now, what if I need the actual card number? What if I go to a place where they actually write down the number instead of, scanning it or swiping it or whatever? Or what if I want to use it for online purchases where Apple Pay is not accepted, or I want to add it to an account for recurring billing, automatic payments and stuff? Can I do that? The answer is absolutely yes, you can. All you got to do is go into the Wallet app, tap on your Apple Card, and tap on Card Information. Authenticate with Touch ID or Face ID, and you will instantly see the card number, the name on the card, the expiration date, and the 3-digit security code. If you ever feel you need to, you can instantly request a new card number right from the Apple Wallet. You can also request a replacement titanium card if you need to, but the two do not have to be done in tandem. Apple Card also differs from other cards because there's no late fees. Now, again, I advise paying your balance in full, or at least as much as you can, prior to the due dates, because that's the healthy way to do it, to pay off what you are spending, not to accrue, an unhealthy balance on it. But there are no late fees. That's the point. And the other really awesome thing about the Apple Card is daily cash. So, many cards offer cash rewards, but with Apple, it's different. First of all, there are 3 different levels of daily cash. If you make a purchase from any Apple storefront, whether it be a movie or show or a book from one of the iTunes or bookstores or the App Store, you buy an app, you pay for an in-app subscription, or of course, if you buy even your iCloud storage. And certainly if you buy that new iPhone or, iPad or whatever, these are all going to give you 3% cash back. If you purchase anywhere that's not Apple, but you use Apple Pay, and Apple Pay is accepted so many places, you're going to get 2% daily cash. And finally, if Apple Pay is not accepted and you need to use the physical titanium card at a non-Apple location, you're going to still get 1% daily cash. And daily is the key word here. You don't wait. You don't have to call up and say, well, what is my cash rewards balance? Now, may I have that money, please? No. This, every single day that you spend, you will receive. If you make a payment with the Apple Card, you will get cash back. I often see it. And where do you get it? It goes right into your Apple Wallet on your Apple Cash, Apple Pay Cash card. Again, you can use that anytime you want with Apple Pay, or you can transfer it to your bank. It is so cool. What I've done, because I can always pay it instantly, it's not a problem, but I've actually started using this for most of my bills, all of my purchases, all of this stuff. Because why not? I can keep accruing daily cash. And then what'll happen is, in the morning I'll wake up and one of my notifications, after my good morning screen with the weather and stuff is, hey, Apple Card from Apple Wallet, you received, and some days it's, 9 cents, and other days it's, a dollar and a half or something in Apple Cash, but it adds up. It adds up. The other really cool reason to use this for everything is because it's fully accessible with VoiceOver. It uses the Apple Wallet. You don't need any separate apps. And every purchase is immediately shown up with a notification, and you can track your spending right in the Apple Wallet. Now, you get a notification with Apple Pay anyway, but with the Apple Card, you can track all the spending right in the wallet. It uses Apple Maps and Siri to provide better descriptions of places. If you, rather than vague terminology, it color codes the kind of purchases they are, whether they're food or, you know, services or what have you. It gives you recommended amounts to pay, so you're keeping a healthy financial status, you know, and not hurting your credit rating or anything like this, and allows you to schedule automatic payments with the associated bank card or to just pay on the fly when you want. You know, it gives you different recommended amounts that you can pay, and it truly is just an amazing card. Apple Card, folks, I'm telling you what, it is great. And I am, you know, again, I recognize that credit cards can be a dangerous thing if they're not used properly, and we can overuse them, we can abuse them, we can do, you know, really, really awful things with them. But I'm just talking about using this as your main means of payment and then immediately saying, all right, now I'm going to pay that off from my bank. You know, you typically have to wait 24 to 48 hours to actually pay off that amount, because it does indeed have to wait till it's not pending anymore. But you know what I'm saying. You pay it off. I mean, we're just talking about using this as your primary payment method. And I mean, we use it, you know, as I said, with all of the stuff. And, you know, I've even taken bills. What's really cool is our internet provider is Comcast. And I was already going to switch, you know, we had auto pay from our checking account. I was already going to switch, and I was going to say, well, I'll use auto pay with Apple Card instead because I'll get some cash back. I found out that I can actually use Apple Pay with Comcast. So now I just use Apple Pay, and I actually get 2% daily cash every time I pay my internet bill. I mean, this is really, really cool. So, Apple Pay purchases securely, conveniently, much faster than pulling out the old credit card. Accepted all over the country and really all over the world. Most banks support it, so you can add any of your bank cards or credit cards. Some of the examples of nationwide places that accept Apple Pay are things like McDonald's, Subway, Panera Bread, Starbucks. Let's see, Best Buy, Rite Aid stores, I believe CVS, JCPenney's, I believe, Target. There are tons of others, just tons of others. I think Wegmans, maybe the grocery store. It's a huge list. And then, you know, what I've found is that even some small privately owned locations are locally owned, independently operating grocery store in our community. A small Mexican cafe in a nearby town, a little kind of a Christian based coffee shop, and so forth in our community. What else? I know I'm probably forgetting some. They all accept it, and I said, wow, I'm really impressed that you guys are accepting it. And some have done it because they use like the Square card reader, for those of you who have heard of those things. We'll talk about them in the iPad class, but some have done it for that reason, and others said, well, you know, we were required to just upgrade our system anyway, and so it was kind of like, yeah, we just did it because Apple Pay was part of the package. So, you know, more and more places are going to keep accepting it. And also, you know, even some vending machines, some gas stations, some transit cards, there are all kinds of places that accept Apple Pay around and throughout this country and the world, and I believe more and more will. I will acknowledge that Walmart has very deliberately chosen to go its own path with Walmart Pay. I am not nearly as much of a supporter for Walmart Pay, going around championing that like I am Apple Pay, but I will tell you, at least it gets the job done. It is secure. It has improved since it was first released by Walmart, and to me, it still deserves to be part of the connected digital life. Now, back to Apple Pay, though.
You're going to be amazed if you've never tried it out. Seriously, it is absolutely incredible. And then there's Apple Cash, your cash card for person to person. Use the money to make purchases or transfer to the bank. Apple Wallet in and of itself to store your airline tickets, your train tickets, your coupons, your cards. And by the way, even if the app doesn't support Apple Wallet, like a lot of them do, okay? Like Starbucks supports Apple Pay, but they also support Apple Wallet if you have a Starbucks card and you can just recharge that card. Sam's Club, as I mentioned, you can have your membership card stored in the Apple Wallet. As I said, airline and train tickets, concert tickets from Ticketmaster. You know, different types of these things do indeed specifically support Apple Wallet. But even if the app doesn't support or the service doesn't support it, you can scan printed coupons into or cards or passes into Apple Wallet as well. Now, one other thing that I was just when we were talking about different places and, you know, I mentioned Ticketmaster with all these things. And I was just thinking, too, that we have Hershey Park near us. And I think every single location in Hershey Park accepts Apple Pay. All of the food, you know, the concession places, the shops, everywhere. You know, so this is really, really awesome, and it is truly the way to go. All right, and finally, Apple Card. The perfect companion to, or maybe really the foundation for, Apple Pay. Use it. Use it wisely, but use it. Get this Apple Cash, daily cash rewards, track your spending, do things the way we ought to be doing them in the 21st century. So that's going to complete today's discussion in section 2 of Connected Digital Life. Next week, we are going to start into the section on the Apple TV, the TV app, streaming services, and cutting the cord with Apple TV. I want to thank you for tuning in. God bless you, and we will see you back next week. If you're attending live, it's 3:30 p.m. Eastern every Monday. Take care, folks.